Welcome to Texas Style Coworking. The Ranch Office is a neighborhood community office that delivers a warm atmosphere with a heavy dose of Southern hospitality. Located in Memorial, Katy, and Baytown, we offer private offices, conference rooms, event space, and much more. Come change things up and check us out. Remember, life is better at the ranch.
In a global industry where anything can happen, where mistakes cost much more than dollars, we bring you expertise from around the world to ensure that everyone goes home safe every day. The internationally acclaimed Oil and Gas HSE podcast starts now with your host, Russell Stewart.
Hey, everybody. As always, thanks for listening. Today, my guest on the show, actually, I should say returning guest, is Michael Curran. And actually, I should have also said Dr. Michael Curran. Mike, thanks for coming on the show. We have a lot of PhDs who come on this show. I usually tease them about the little girls who were sitting around talking about what their fathers did for a living. And one little girl said, well, my dad's a medical doctor. And another girl whose father had a PhD, she said, well, my dad's a doctor too, but not the kind of does anybody any good. But that's not the case here because you do folks a lot of good with reclamation and restoration projects that not only benefit the environment, but they help people too. So, Mike, you're with Abnoble Ecological Solutions, LLC, right?
Yeah, Abnova Ecological Solutions.
Okay, and that's located where?
Cheyenne, Wyoming is our main headquarters.
Okay, all right. And I know I had you on before, but it's been a while. Are you from Wyoming?
I grew up in Manasquan, New Jersey, on the Atlantic coast.
That's what I thought I remembered. In fact, I think you have a residence or you have one of your offices there, don't you?
Yeah, I do some salt marsh and coastal resilience work out in New Jersey. And I do some stuff as like an expert witness for a couple law groups out here. But I do most of my stuff in the oil, gas, and mining world out in the Rocky Mountains.
Okay, and that's what we're going to talk about. Now, you have a PhD in ecology. Where'd you get that from?
From the University of Wyoming.
Okay, and then a graduate minor in statistics at the same place?
Yeah, also from the University of Wyoming.
Okay, and then you're another one of my guests that's got more letters after his name than you do in your name. You got the PhD, you got the CERP, which is a certification in ecological restoration, I think. Some kind of wildlife biology certification. Is that right? CWB?
Yeah, the CERP is Certified Ecological Restoration Practitioner, and that's from the Society for Ecological Restoration. And then the CWB is Certified Wildlife Biologist from the Wildlife Society.
And then you also have a piloting license if you fly drones, and you do that too, right?
I do. I have a FAA Part 107 pilot's license to operate small aircraft. Yep.
Well, see, folks, there you go. We only get the best on here. So, Mike, the last time I had you on the show, and as folks are going to hear here in just a minute, we're going to talk about some additional things. But what I was very interested in was the fact that I got introduced to you and I found out that you had done a reclamation project for an oil and gas company. I think it was either Wyoming or Montana. It was a drilling pad site. You went in there and restored it or reclaimed it. And then you did some testing and whatnot. And you found out that you actually, after the oil company left and you did what you did, you left it in better shape than before they came in there and built the drilling pad, right?
Yeah, that's what we talked about in the last time. A lot of the work I did as a graduate student, I worked with 26 different oil and gas companies across the state of Wyoming on different aspects of the reclamation part of drilling. So after they develop a well pad, how do they put it back together? And the areas where I did most of my intensive studies were in the Pinedale Anticline and the Jonah Infill natural gas fields in kind of northwest or kind of, I don't know, maybe west central Wyoming, Sublette County, Wyoming. And what I was finding in the Jonah field, we were having, 22 times more pollinators on our reclaimed well pads than we did in the quote unquote reference areas surrounding the well pads. Found a really similar story up in the Pinedale Anticline, then published both of them out of my graduate work. And now, yeah, last summer I did a lot of work up in the Pinedale with not only the well pad company up there, but with the pipeline company as well. We were looking at insect response and plant diversity response. And yeah, we were looking at some soil characteristics on these reclaimed well pads and pipelines and finding a pretty positive story, I think, you know, in pretty good faith with a lot of data and numbers to back it up. Far and large, the oil and gas industry is leaving their land in better condition than they found it.
That's why I wanted to have you on the show. That's what I wanted to hear you say that. And now I think we're going to talk about a couple of other projects you've done, which just verify that even more. You know, one of the things that I noticed on your LinkedIn profile, you say that my mission is to provide agnostic data, satisfy regulatory criteria, and inform decision-making for reclamation and restoration projects that benefit both the environment and society. But this term agnostic data, talk to me a little bit about that, because, you know, something you and I talked about after we recorded the last show, you told me about, you know, some folks out there, you know, about who, if they go out there and get the data that the company, you know, it's not what they already had their minds made up about. They don't want to be confused with the facts. And so they suppress it, right?
I don't think necessarily that they're suppressing it. What I mean by agnostic data is just data that, you know, what's on the ground and data that we can collect one time and use for many purposes. So oftentimes when I was in graduate school, you know, a company would give me their data and it was collected specific to meet some sort of regulatory criteria. So say a company had a stormwater pollution prevention plan and their site had to be 70% relative ground cover compared to a adjacent reference area. I'd have a company say, you know, we put 14 native seeds in our seed mix and our site now is 64% relative cover compared to our adjacent. And I would look at that and say, well, that's fine and dandy. You know, we're 6% shy of meeting our regulatory criteria, but I don't know what is expressing itself from the seed mix or if those are weeds or what have you. So I've been working on collecting species specific data, and then I can go back to an operator and say, hey, here's what's working in this seed mix and this soil type. In Wyoming, our big deal that we're facing now is trying to work to keep the greater sage grouse, a prairie chicken, off the endangered species list. So I can go in and say, well, you know, out of that seed mix, this is what's growing on your site. And six of those flowering species are preferred into the sage grouse diet. And oh yeah, by the way, we're at 72% cover and we're passing our criteria. So that's what I mean there is I'm just trying to collect data one time and then be able to spin around with it and help operators improve their reclamation practices and be able to satisfy regulatory criteria. I try to look a little bit ahead of the game. And, you know, now in Wyoming, we have this sage grouse executive order. Let's say 5 years from now, we had a mule deer or a pronghorn executive order come out. It'd be nice to just be able to take that same data and say, oh, well, here's what pronghorn habitat is. Let's see if we've got that on our pipeline. Let's see if we've got that on our well pads. So yeah, that's where I'm getting at there.
Okay. All right. So these other projects you've done since the last time we talked about that first project, tell me about them and tell me what you found.
Yeah, so I actually have a couple really cool projects going on. One of them is funded by the Wyoming Game and Fish Department, and I have an intern who's doing a really great job for me. So shout out to Miss B. Bott is her name. She's looking at all the insects in the sage grouse diet. And the last time we spoke, we were talking about insects and pollinators. Well, I'm now kind of cross-referencing and seeing, oh, wow, that after ants, it looks like this leaf beetles from this family, the Chrysomyelids, are really what sage grouse chicks prefer to eat. Well, looking back at some of my previous work in the Jonah field, we find about 77 times more of those beetles on our reclaimed well pads because we have, you know, more flowers on our well pads than we do in the reference system. So I'm excited about that work. I'm also working with the Game and Fish and the mining and the oil and gas industry on a state of Wyoming wide reclamation best management practice project, which I'm excited about. So I'm surveying the industry practitioners. It's one thing. Yeah, sure. I have a PhD, but I wasn't operating heavy equipment for 30 years. So I'm actually asking the folks that do it every day. And it's pretty cool. Some of the stuff that's coming back where, you know, I'll hear a guy from a coal mine say, I've been doing this for 32 years. And in 2007, when this new technology came out, it changed the game because it allowed me to rip my soil at 24 inches and I can space stuff out. And this is exactly when I put my sagebrush seed into the ground. So I'm excited about that. And then a lot of the work I did last summer, which I'm just getting to the stage where we should be putting these out for peer review in the next couple days. One on the well pad system up in the Pinedale Anticline. My insect work I did in grad school, and a big part of the reason I did it's not just for pollinators, it's because insects respond more quickly to environmental change than any other animal group, really. So when we would see 12 or 20 times more insects on our reclaim site, that's a really positive indication that we have a highly functioning ecosystem. And I was doing that on early sites, like so 1 to 3 years old. And if you look at some ecology models of how biodiversity responds to ecological succession over time. So when I'm talking succession, you've probably seen that model in grade school from bare ground all the way up to the trees. So you see bare ground and then you see some grasses and some flowers. And after 20 years, you got a forest. In Wyoming, our forest is really the sagebrush steppe ecosystem. But you would expect that at those stages where you've got all the flowers in there to see higher levels of biodiversity. And then at some point, you know, there's like this exponential growth and then it kind of tapers off and then you match the reference system. So last year I was playing around on mainly these 5 to 12 year old well pads and finding on average about 4 times more insect abundance and way higher insect diversity on those sites. And again, going back and linking them to what the grouse eat. It's, you know, a lot of the bugs that the grouse are eating are hanging out right on our well pads. In fact, one day I was walking, I flushed 28 or 29 adult female grouse off a active well pad off the interim reclamation area.
And you say it was an active well pad.
Yeah. So the pad itself, I think, was about 7 acres and about 5 acres of it was in reclamation. So they still had wells on it and that little teardrop for the tanks and stuff to come. But I was doing a vegetation survey and it was like every step I took, I flushed a new bird off of it. So I hope the Fish and Wildlife Service doesn't think I'm harassing birds, but it was kind of cool. And then I was out there for a good chunk of the summer. So I was trying to really understand that whole system. And what I kept noticing was in the morning and in the evening, I would see the mother bird lead their chicks up to the edge of these well pads and the edge of these pipelines. And the only thing I can think is that in the heat of the day that they're going out into the sagebrush to get some shade and maybe to avoid some predators, but they're really learning that if all their food source, if they've got a buffet over on this reclamation site on the, you know, the edge of this well pad or the edge of this pipeline. I mean, if I were the mother of some sage grouse chicks, that's where I would be taking them. And then, yeah, I looked at the pipeline system, which no one's ever really looked at before, across a 13-mile stretch. And again, I found of my insect collection there and each sample I paired with a reference area, 82% of the bugs I found came from the pipeline and only 18% were in the reference area. So we're looking at a 4 to 5 fold increase. And why I think is that a good story is because we have a network now where the pipelines are connecting these well pads. And if we got 78% of our insects in my well pad study, so and compared to 22% on our reclaim versus our reference, and then 82 versus 18, in both cases, we're looking at, you know, roughly 4 times higher. So I think it is really, really neat that we're seeing that field as a whole network of positive ecological forces at play through our reclamation. And I think a lot of that is just a tribute to these operators for being very responsible stewards of their land. And it was cool. I got to go out with Jasmine Allison, who's Pure West's reclamation specialist, and just get to listen to her thought process. And she says, you know, I've changed the seed mix in this section of the field 5 times over the last 12 years. And the reason I'm doing that is I'm looking at my monitoring data and seeing, oh, this species never grows in this soil, or this species does really well in all the soil types I deal with. And I think that that's a story that, unless you're out there, a lot of people don't get told, that these operators have really talented people working for them that are making decisions to ensure that, you know, at the end of the day, that these landscapes are left in better condition. So that was quite a lot of fun. And then, yeah, one of the studies, they let me look at some problematic locations, and it wasn't, all in all, they're doing a really great job. It's just a handful of sites I went and looked at, and just got to see it in all cases, it translated back to a little bit of just minor soil management issues. So I think with that, we can really make a game plan moving forward to make sure we avoid doing that and keep seeing all these positive outcomes that we can have. Then, yeah, down in the Jonah, I've been looking at some bigger data sets, and we're finding, you know, on average on our reclaim well pad system across the whole field, we've got an average of, I think, 9.6 native plants per well pad. And then in our reference area, we're about 5.4 native plants in our reference area. So we're almost doubling our native plant diversity through reclamation. Crunching some other numbers, looking at above ground net primary productivity, 450 pounds per acre growing on our well pads versus 270 pounds per acre in our reference area. So we're nearly doubling our vegetation biomass through reclamation. So not only are we providing habitat on reclamation and providing the insects and the flowers and stuff that these birds in that system need, and the grasses that the larger animals, the deer and the elk and what have you need, I think that's a really good carbon sequestration story. If we're doubling our above ground biomass, we're using that age old science of photosynthesis to bring some of that carbon back down. So I think that that's a really good story. And I'm hoping to get that out into the peer reviewed literature sometime in the next couple of weeks as well. So
I think it's a great story too. And that's why I wanted to have you come on the podcast, because I want to get it out to the OGGN audience, which is actually an international audience. This story needs to be told. It's got to be told. And a couple of things. Are you expanding this into other states, or are you just in the Wyoming area, or how's that going?
No, I think it's gaining traction. I've heard, a couple companies in Colorado are putting, you know, a lot of companies have to do this ESG or sustainability.
Sure. Yeah.
Reporting. And I had noticed, I think it was 2022 in September, I spoke down at this GPA midstream conference in San Antonio, and everyone was just talking about carbon capture and carbon reduction in their ESG. And I got up and talked about biodiversity and how you could use reclamation. And I think that that is starting to get some traction. It's kind of, you've got to do reclamation anyway, if you just put a little bit of thought into it and handle your soil properly and use native seeds, you're going to be, I guess I should jump back. The Jonah field gets 4 inches of precip a year and 39 frost-free days. That Pinedale Anticline gets a little more, closer to like 7 or 9 inches of precip, but still on that 39 to 42 frost-free days a year. So we don't even have a growing season up there, Russell. And if we could double our plant biomass and 22 times our pollinating insects and triple or quadruple our diversity, if we could do it there, I think we could do it in a lot of places that don't have those insanely harsh conditions. But I think a lot of companies are starting to see the value of, you know, if we've got to do it anyway, we may as well do it right and do it right the first time. And I think, that this is growing a little bit. I'm starting to do a little more work on other areas of Wyoming and Colorado as well. So slowly but surely, I think it is gaining some traction.
Well, I hope we can use this podcast as a means of helping you gain even more traction. So along those lines, there's a meeting, 41st annual conference in Knoxville, Tennessee, of the, what is that, the ASRS?
Yeah, the ASRS is the American Society of Reclamation Sciences.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, our 41st meeting is June 2nd through 5th in Knoxville. I've been a member of that society since 2011, and I think this is our 12th state that it's been in since then. And I love it because it's a society, probably a third industry, a third academia, and then the other third split between government and consulting groups. And it's, you know, more so than some other societies. And I mean, all the societies have their time and place, but we're pushing sound science, but we're not overly academic. We're trying to get the boots on the ground work done too, and really push things forward. Last year, that meeting was in Boise, Idaho. We had a really great representation from the oil and gas industry in the Western U.S. I expect some of them to come to Knoxville, but we'll probably see a lot of the Appalachian coal country and hopefully some folks from that Marcellus Shale come down and learn about. We have topics all over the country and all over. We have 16 countries represented in that society. There'll be pretty heavy focus on Appalachian stuff. Next year is up in Butte, Montana. So we'll probably see a lot more oil and gas and Rocky Mountain related issues at that one. So yeah, I would encourage people to come out, and I've certainly learned a lot there and done some good networking. And I think I'm excited to say that, yeah, reclamation now, it's not just a guessing game anymore. We've got it. It's a well-accredited science, and I think we're making leaps and bounds, and I hope showing we can continue to responsibly extract energy and through the act of reclamation, put our lands back into functional ecosystems and in a lot of instances, more highly functioning ecosystems than they were before we got there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's just music to my ears. That's a wonderful story. And I guess some of this stuff we've been talking about and some of these stats and all that sort of thing, I guess that's on your website.
Yeah, I try to keep all my publications freely accessible. I understand I'm a one-person company, so I can't do it all. So I like to share the information I find so other people can take it and mimic it. So yeah, if you go to abnovaecology.com, on that, there's a page about my services, a biography about myself, and then I keep some news and my publications available for download so people can go in there. And then I guess, yeah, when we're on that topic, it's been funny because I've been having that conversation a lot lately of, you know, Mike, you're no longer in academia. Why are you publishing so much? And part of the reason I guess I'm doing that is I'm looking at things like the Endangered Species Act and some of these policies and rules and plans that are coming out, and they're all supposed to be guided by science. And the highest form of science is the peer-reviewed science. So, you know, I've seen it with my own two eyes that we can make these landscapes better. And yeah, the reason I'm going and continuing publishing, even though I'm not in that academic bubble anymore, is I think it's important not to just get the story out there, but for operators and for folks to actually be able to have a hard copy of a peer-reviewed publication and say, hey, this isn't just, this guy told me this at the bar on Friday night. This is, he didn't just tell me on Russell's podcast that this is, you know, real legitimate stuff that's happening. So I hope that industry can appreciate that some.
Well, I do too. And we'll put your website, of course, in the show notes so the folks can reference it. Mike, it doesn't take long to fill up a 30-minute conversation, which we've just about done. Again, I want to say thank you for coming on the show. Anything else you want to add before we sign off?
No, thanks again for having me. And yeah, I always enjoy keeping in touch with you. So have a great rest of your day. And I look forward to continuing working with you, Russell.
Well, I do too. You know, with your ecology background, I wish you could, I'm here in Houston. I wish you could do something about all this green stuff that's showing up all over the windshield of my car. And the reason I've got the sniffles this afternoon, but anyway, it's starting to be springtime here in Texas. Are you guys still in winter there in Wyoming? What's the temperature?
It was in the 40s last week. And then, you know, up at that elevation, it'll drop down. It'll you wake up at 5:30 in the morning, it'll be snowing. And then by 11 o'clock in the morning, it's 45 degrees and sunny and it's all gone and it'll start over again. But I think spring is starting to show its face a little bit.
Yeah, well, Easter comes early this year, so that sometimes. Hey, Mike, again, thanks for coming on the show. Everybody out there, thanks for listening. Please tell all your friends about us. Post us on LinkedIn, all your social media. Leave us a review. You can reach out to me on LinkedIn if you want to offer even yourself as a guest or some subject topics. If you're looking for a speaker for a meeting or something like that, reach out to me, and we'll see you next time.
Tune in next week for another engaging episode of the Oil & Gas HSE Podcast, a production of the Oil & Gas Global Network. Learn more at oggn.com.